This is The Granite Beat, a podcast where we highlight New Hampshire journalists, ask them about recent stories they've published, and about what it's like to cover their corner of this small and interesting state. I'm Julie Hershan Hart, and I'm here with Adam Drapshow.
Hello.
This is something of a first for The Granite Beat, in that our guests today have each been on before, but not together. Loyal listeners will know Melanie Plenda as Executive Director of the Granite State News Collaborative, which makes this podcast possible. And joining her is Carol Robidoux, founder, editor, and chief dog catcher for Manchester Inklink. We've requested their presence today to discuss New Hampshire's newest outlet, Nashua Inklink. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Since you each represent a slightly unconventional media organization, perhaps more than slightly, I'd like to get things started by asking each of you to give me a thumbnail version of how you explain what it is that you do. For the benefit of listeners that aren't already familiar. Melanie, why don't you get us started?
Sure. Well, the Granite State News Collaborative, which was co-founded by Carol Robidoux, actually, and probably was entirely her brainchild, if I had to guess. I wasn't there at the beginning. Is basically a collective of more than 20 local news, higher ed, educational organizations, and nonpartisan community organizations that have all agreed to work together so that more people in New Hampshire have access to more local trusted news.
And Carol?
Yeah. So I started Manchester Inklink almost 10 years ago as a way of having a job after a couple of layoffs. I had been laid off from the Union Leader and then laid off from Patch. And so I wanted to figure out if there was a way for me to create a hyper-local community news source for my community here in Manchester that was responsive and maybe a little bit off the beaten path, but, you know, delivered respectable news, but kind of with a little more heart and a little more discernment. So that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years is just trying to connect with the community and keep everybody informed.
Heart and discernment. I like that. So who had the big idea to start Nashua Inklink, and when did that conversation begin?
Melanie, you want to field that one? Or?
Sure. So that one actually started I talk a lot with local editors, and I talk with people just out in the community and funders and things like that. And over time, people kept coming to me, and they know that, you know, we're tied into the local news ecosystem, for lack of a better word. And people would ask, you know, what are we doing? What's going on in Nashua? What's happening in Nashua? And talking about, there just wasn't the amount of coverage that you'd normally see for the second largest city in a state, you know, and the second most diverse city in a state. So the more people kind of shared their concerns about that, the more we started trying to work together to figure out how to fix it and what we could do about it. So we got a little bit of funding from New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, and we put in some money from GSNC's coffers, and we got a team of our local partners together, our editors together, to kind of talk it through. You know, and every one of our editors kind of has a different audience that they serve, but they each can kind of contribute a part. And eventually, after months of discussion, we kind of landed on what's really needed is this just, you know, very like bread and butter everyday coverage so that people know what's going on in their community in Nashua. And Carol, I think in passing, mentioned, she's like, yeah, I kind of always wanted to expand into Nashua. And I'm like, oh my God, it's perfect. So we worked together with, you know, Carol and I got together with Anthony Payton at Nashua Digital, because he had similar ideas to sort of, you know, bring more news to Nashua. And we worked out a way for this to happen. Carol really, I mean, to me, and I don't mean to fangirl out, but she's one of my favorite people just because she cares so much about local news and about it being driven by community. So I couldn't think of a better partner on this, honestly. So, you know, we figured out kind of what would it take to have like a reporter, a dedicated reporter. And then we figured out how we could kind of share that reporter. We have Maya Blanchard, who's been doing just outstanding. And Carol can obviously speak more about the day-to-day that she's doing, because she's working directly with Carol. And what's great is that all the content that Maya produces for Nashua, we do share with the other partners. So Nashua Digital gets to use that, even though they're actually not a partner in the collaborative, but they get, Anthony's outlet gets to use it. The Nashua Telegraph's in our partnership, they get to use it if they choose. So it's really kind of, because we're all working together, it has this multiplier effect where we really are getting more news. And even our other partners who cover statewide news, they can handle maybe bigger projects or bigger picture projects, they're contributing to this effort as well. So it really is, it was, months of kind of work and talking and figuring it out. But I really do think we have the start of something kind of amazing where the people in Nashua can get the coverage they need and deserve, frankly.
Was it always the idea, Carol, that the Manchester Inklink model could be expanded beyond the Queen City? And why do you feel that Nashua was the right spot? I think Melanie mentioned that you had always been thinking about Nashua. So what was it about Nashua for you?
Well, first of all, I'm smiling because when people have asked me questions similar to that, like, what's my plan? My plan was always, my business plan was to write stories and put them out there and hope that people read them and followed along and then eventually perhaps make money at it or something. And so I never really had any, grand plan. That's my secret to success. But I just kind of go with the flow of life and see where it takes me. But in this case, just prior to starting this project, Manchester Inklink, I was working in Nashua for Nashua Patch. I was the OG Nashua Patch editor. I was part of that launch here in New Hampshire when Patch came along in 2011. So I really got to know Nashua. I was there for almost 3 years or about 3 years covering the community very closely, made lots of great friends. The Democrats and the Republicans both thought I was on their side. So that's some, stellar reporting. And I'm kidding. But, when I got laid off from Patch, I really thought about doing a Nashua version of what I'm doing in Manchester, because I had such great connections there. And because I knew the turf, and I knew so much about the community. But yet at that time, it's like when they say that tourism, is the number two thing in New Hampshire or something. And then you want to ask yourself, like, what's number one, which is manufacturing that nobody talks about. So I was number two there in Nashua covering the number two city. But Manchester, the biggest city, to me, I felt like it needed something else, like it needed nurturing or something. And that's where I live. So I said, I'm going to do a Manchester news outlet and see how that goes. They told me it couldn't be done by one person because it's too big. And so that's really all I need to hear in my world. And that goes back to my mother, who used to, use reverse psychology on me to get me to do stuff. So really, anybody listening out there, if you need something from me, just tell me I can't do it or I shouldn't, and I'll be doing it. Yeah. So that's how I got here. And really, when we were talking about Nashua, I just kind of blurted it out that, it might be something I could do because I already did it in Manchester. And to me, it's kind of a simple model, really, just to create something like, gone are the days when a news outlet has, three city reporters and a team of sports writers and a Sunday news section with five reporters who are, spending 5 weeks writing about, dog grooming or whatever they do. Like, those days are over. We don't have the luxury of personnel or time to create a complete news package for people tied up in a bow that's delivered to their doorstep. It just doesn't happen. And I don't understand exactly how we got so lost, but, we're just trying to kind of find a way back into meeting the needs of a community with digital delivery, with community voices that are not always polished and completely professionally journalistic, but that have clout. You know, like one example this week on Nashua Inklink, I have a columnist whose name is Carolyn Choate. She was in the biz for a while as a TV reporter on WNDS. And, you know, she's a smart lady. She's a two-time cancer survivor. She's changed her diet to become a whole food plant-based person to fight cancer. And in the process of all of that, she found a group of people in her community in Nashua who have a culinary school called Live Free and Dine. And it's something I never heard of, but she got connected to it. So when she wrote a column this week about it, it was a great story because it has a lot of information about this resource for the community. It's written in her style, but it's you know, reliable, verifiable information. And it shines a light on how people are connecting with community based on their needs, based on their dietary needs, based on their physical, tangible, everyday life needs. And so that's like, that's one way we can do something to enlighten the community. And then of course, as Melanie mentioned, we have Maya Blanchard, who's kind of a homegrown national reporter. She went to high school there, went to college there, graduated from Riviere. She's wants to learn the ropes of municipal reporting, which is wonderful because we don't see young people engaging in that way so much. And ask any seasoned reporter if they'd like to sit through a 2-hour meeting on bond issues, you know, they're going to run and scream in the other direction. So like, we're trying to get back to basics on that, you know, just provide some basic info for the community and find ways to connect and see what works and see what resonates.
What is the business model for Nashua Inklink, and how will it operate in relation to the Manchester Inklink?
Well, so as Melanie mentioned, you know, we had through the collaborative, there was a funder, the charitable foundation, who was interested in helping to support bringing more news to Nashua in some fashion, whatever that might look like, freelancers or something. But the problem with that was if you hired a bunch of freelancers, then where does the information live so that the good people of Nashua can find it and feel that they have a resource, which is why I felt like it was important to create a space for them that was uniquely Nashua. So the challenge was, you know, if there was a grant in a certain amount of money, could I match that grant, or could I come up with enough money to pay a salary for a full-time reporter? And anybody listening out there, like, I don't hear people talk about this too much in the industry, but, you know, the going rate for a, you know, not even an entry-level reporter, but that's kind of what we're talking about, you know, the average salary, probably $40,000, $50,000, doesn't sound like a lot in this economy, but try to raise that kind of money from your readership. You know, that's why newspapers are struggling, because nobody does the math of, you know, think about the golden days of newspapers when there were full page advertisements for car dealerships and that was what funded your newsroom. Like, that doesn't exist anymore. So I had to think about the responsibility side of hiring somebody and then being able to pay them. So I kind of did what, you know, what I know how to do after 10 years, which is I've developed some relationships with local advertisers, and I reached out to some of my Manchester Inklink advertisers and asked if they'd be willing to take a chance on the launch of Nashua Inklink by supporting it with some advertising, even though we don't have a lot of eyeballs on the site yet. And they because they know who I am and what I've tried to do and why I'm doing it, they were happy to support that effort. On top of that, I have some other people in the Nashua trenches who are willing to, you know, just talk to their friends and colleagues about ways to support us. And then we're also trying to replicate our VIP, which is a virtual Inklink patron program where people can, our news is free, but you can sign up to be a supporter monthly or annually, and then you get a free t-shirt and beer with the publisher whenever she, you know, puts it on the calendar and talk about issues. So it's very much like just coming from different streams, you know, of advertising, just like any news organization is trying to figure out ways to support their news effort. So I guess the short answer, now that I've given you the very long answer, is, you know, it's a mix of grant funding, traditional advertising, and reader support.
And I have to say, a beer with Carol is worth the price of admission, because I've had the pleasure, and it's totally worth it. I also have a t-shirt, and it is one of my favorite t-shirts. Just throwing that out there.
Carol, do you have any help in managing the Manchester Inklink or in editing, or are you managing both projects yourself right now?
I mean, because I'm a bit of a control freak, and I say that lovingly, you know, I manage a lot of things myself because I feel like it's my job to do so. You know, I do pretty much a lot of it. I don't need to do a lot of it myself. Like, I could pass it off to some of my fellow collaborative partners who have more than thrown themselves at my feet to say, I'll help you with editing or whatever you need. But in the day to day, you know, I get a story from Maya, for the most part, you know, I'm reading it and I'm editing it and I'm going back and forth with her, and I feel like I can do this, you know, I can do everything. So it's kind of like that, you know, and I try to fill in the gaps. You know, in fact, Maya is taking a vacation next week because she had it planned before she got hired. So I might be covering, you know, a alderman meeting next week or something. I mean, and that's okay. It's, you know, it keeps you on your toes. But yeah, I mean, that's the goal, really, is to be so successful that I can afford to hire more help or something. And potentially that could happen, because the response in Nashua so far has been really, really encouraging. The mayor, Jim Donches, was our first VIP. He signed up, and he shares all of our stuff all the time, and he's reached out personally to thank us for caring. You know, that's a great feeling, and it's a pretty good endorsement. And I had the former mayor of Manchester tell me that, you know, she was speaking with a mayor of another town someplace in coastal New Hampshire who wished he had an Inklink. So it's like, it's the thing that people want, is to just feel that their community matters and their community is seen on some level, and that they have some say in that.
And I think, if I can throw in there, I think when you're talking about the business model and talking about, and you didn't mention sustainability, but I think that's what Carol was getting at. Like, how do you sustain this once you start it? Because what the worst thing would be, and I think probably we had this conversation when we were talking about it, was getting it started and then not being able to continue it. And the community has come to rely on it, and then it goes away. So how do we keep that from happening? And I think, like, what Carol is talking about with this support from the mayor and reader support, I mean, honestly, that is the key to the long-term sustainability, is these relationships that she and Maya and others are building to build that trust with the community. Because it will be the community, whether it's people, individuals, whether it's officials, whether it's local funders or businesses, they're the ones that are going to keep it going, you know, and once they know about it and know how valuable it is to them. So, and I think that, you know, if I can say about Carol, I mean, that is, I feel like one of the places where, one of the things that's made Manchester Inklink so successful is, like, Carol is Manchester. Like, you know, talk about, I was sitting at lunch with her one time, and literally people of all walks of life, everybody who walked down the sidewalk, hey, Carol, hi, Carol. Carol knows everybody. And I think that that's the thing that has been part of what made Manchester Inklink so successful. And I think that that is inherent at the start of Nashua Inklink. And so I think its long-term sustainability is already built on a good foundation of being rooted in the community and building that trust from the start. So, I think that's, if I could say, I think that's probably part of the business model as well.
So it sounds like you've had a fairly good reception by the community so far, which is encouraging to hear. Did you have to overcome any challenges when you were launching Nashua InkLink? And how did those compare to any you might have had when you launched in Manchester?
Well, I mean, for one reason, geographically, I am not there. Although it's a quick 20-minute drive in a way, you know, right down the turnpike, I can be there. And that, you know, that was how it operated when it was my beat to cover Nashua. But I miss, you know, not just being able to walk out my door and take a deep breath and say, here I am, Nashua, you know, what's going on today? But that's where Maya comes in. She's made some great connections so far and is basically doing what every good reporter needs to do, which is just kind of get to know who the players are, who the people, the movers, the shakers, the young people, the people that are tried and true. And it's challenging to learn what are the current most pressing issues. Like, I think it's easy for any of us in this business or living on earth to say, yeah, homelessness is going to be an issue, or housing is going to be a big issue in a city like Nashua, because it's a big issue everywhere. They have, you know, some manufacturing, like an asphalt plant that wants to plant itself, not to be redundant with the word plant, but, you know, they're trying to build, and the community thought it was a dead issue. And then, you know, we posted that they were having a public hearing about the air quality, you know, and everybody was up in arms like, hey, we thought this was over. But that's because they didn't have anybody reporting on it. Like, the fact is, it's in the courts right now. But so we were able to, you know, just get that information out there. But as far as challenges go, I mean, we had to build a website from scratch. I have, you know, an amazing web developer who works for me, and she did a great job capturing Nashua. I found, funny story, I guess, as long as we're telling stories, you know, hopefully short story, but during the New Hampshire primary, which was kind of a dud this year, I went to the Shaskeen Irish pub for a dinner because there was nothing going on. And I met a guy at the bar with a camera who happened to be from Nashua. And we got to talking, and he's like super enthusiastic about what we're doing. So he's contributed some photos to help build the website and wants to do, you know, some news photography and even some sales. Like, it's people just crawl out of the woodwork sometimes, you know, when I need them to most. And so the challenges don't really feel like challenges to me, or maybe they just feel like a challenge can be a good thing. You know, it's not like it's a negative thing. It's just like, how are we going to figure this out? And then we figure it out and we move on. So it's mostly been just fun and positive, and came together really fast. I have to say that as well. You know, it's like, we're talking about it in maybe November, and then all of a sudden, poof, there it is. So, but, I surprised myself. I'm like, whoa, who did this? Oh, me. No. but yeah. So, I mean, there's always the challenge of this every day. You're worried about missing things, you know, you don't want to be so out of touch that you're not seeing what's happening. But I think we all just have to do our best at this point in the news business to deliver what we can to people and to try to continue to improve on that. And I think the other thing is making sure readers understand, as Melanie was sort of alluding to, that the news is not just like a given. You know, the idea of having journalists caring about your city or your town requires some investment from somewhere. You could have it from a special interest group, or, you know, a political party that has deep pockets and wants to fund biased news or something like that. You know, or you could have a community come together and say, like, this is important to us. So the advertisers and the citizens say, yeah, I'm gonna pay my Hulu bill, and I'm gonna pay my iTunes bill, and I'm gonna pay my dues to journalism, whatever that looks like, you know, because I care about it, because I want it in my life. It matters.
I wonder if this experiment has been informative to either of you about where we are on the local journalism landscape and what the future might bring, and if this Inklink model, or at least what you've done here with Nashua, could be a way forward to help get back to that sort of era that Carol referred to earlier, where there was more robust coverage for every community.
I think there's lots of models. Like, I mean, the thing that doesn't work anymore, I guess we all know this, is like having a lot of overhead, like the newsprint and all of that. Like, people like their tangible things to hold on to, but we're quickly getting away from that. And statistically, you know, 70% or more of my readers are on a phone of some sort. And eventually, you know, I guess we're not even going to have those. We're just going to have like a button on our virtual reality glasses or something. I don't know. I mean, that's the other thing. We don't know what in 5 years, like what's happening? How are we going to read stuff, and where are we getting the info from? Is there going to still be Facebook? Is that going to take over the world, or is it going to disappear? Right now, you know, we have social media outlets that try to be news outlets, and I don't know. It's like ever changing. It's a puzzle in that way. And I can't say anybody can see the future. So what I'm doing, you know, even what I'm doing in 10 years since I started has shifted and changed a bit. And the constant is the interest in bringing people news and information that matters to them. And I don't think that goes away, but how people can get access to that, that's part of the problem. You know, a lot of our respectable news sites have a paywall, hard or soft, where, you know, you can read a little bit and then pay for more or pay completely. And I get that. Like, that's one way to solve that problem of how do you pay people and how do you keep it floating? But in my gut, I can't bring myself to have a paywall, because I think every single person should have basic news and information available to them. It shouldn't be in this digital age. It used to be you could get, like, some guy would buy the paper, read it in, you know, 10 minutes while he's eating at the diner, leave it at the diner, and then 10 more people would read that one newspaper for free. So even pay for a paper model was not, you know, wasn't a hard stop if you couldn't afford 35 cents for a paper. But would I love some fancy man with a, or woman, you know, with a big bank account to come along and say, "I believe in you, Carol. I'm going to give you all the money in the world, and we're going to plant little Inklinks all over New Hampshire." Would I like that? Yeah, sure, I would get into that. But is that likely to happen? No, probably not, because people are territorial and they might not get what I'm doing, you know. But yeah, like yesterday, I spent a good bit of time addressing envelopes to send out gift cards to some of our VIPs who were selected in a monthly raffle to win a restaurant gift card, just to thank them for supporting me. Like, who does that? Like, I do. Because it's the little things that matter to people.
And I'll say, just big picture for local journalism, I think I get the benefit at the collaborative of seeing how all the individual outlets are adapting to the local news sort of landscape, and what they're doing and how hard they're working and how much they're trying. And I also get the opportunity to talk to people outside of our state who are doing, you know, the same thing. And maybe I'm biased because I'm right here in New Hampshire, but I'll tell you what, the level of innovation and just willingness to try something new that maybe even a little bit crazy is strong in our state among our news outlets. And I can honestly say that every editor, every publisher that I've talked to deeply cares about their community and keeping this service that they provide to their community alive. And so that gives me so much hope. And I'll say, like, in terms of models, I think that I think New Hampshire was an early adopter of the idea that no outlet can just solely go it alone anymore. There has to be some cooperation. There has to be some collaboration. And then when you do that, you are freed up to do more of what you know you want and need to do, which is to tend to your community. And so I think that, you know, obviously Knockwood has been a model that's worked for us here in New Hampshire. I think this particular collaboration between, you know, the GSNC and Inklink and Nashua Digital, I think I personally, as the ED, I look at it as, could this be a replicable model where there's some sharing of a reporter? Could that help sort of fill different news deserts with the right funding structure? You know, is that something that we could do? Can we scale that up? And then even longer term and bigger picture, you know, a lot of us have been working for more than a year now looking at the idea of a community news fund. And the idea there is to have a pot of money, you know, that all of journalism in New Hampshire can access, that basically, you know, fills fundamental gaps. So that's sort of what the collaborative does, right? Is we try to fill those gaps so that we can help out the local newsrooms and they can continue to do what they need to do. But the other parts of that are, the fact is, we need more reporters and more editors out in the field, in more places, in newsrooms. We need to support these sort of innovative startups that want to, you know, come together in their communities to serve that might be a news desert. And we need to keep up with what Carol was talking about, which is this innovation. How do we adapt and meet the needs of people, meet people where they are in how they're getting their news? How do we be more innovative? And so this fund, you know, when it eventually comes together, will sort of help to do that, help outlets be able to do that. And again, I mean, same kind of idea where it's going to take a whole lot of grassroots talking to people and, you know, reminding them that local news is something that is a service that's of value to them. Like, I think that people, and I say this with not at all a hint of like, you know, snark or cynicism or sarcasm. I mean, I think people take it for granted that local news will always be there and they don't notice it until it's gone. And so if we can remind them ahead of time, hey, this is here, but if you want it to stay here, we got to all work together to make sure that it stays here. So I think it's going to take a lot of grassroots effort to make that happen. I think that it's going to take bringing partnerships of even businesses and industries, talking to them about this is why this is important. This is why if you contribute even just a small amount to this fund, you're helping everyone be more informed. You're helping, you know, you're even helping yourselves because you need industry around. And then of course, talking to foundations and funders who maybe normally don't see journalism as part of their mission. But the fact is, having local journalism helps any foundation, any organization that gives grants, right? Local news helps every single mission, whether it's healthcare, social justice reform, women's rights, women's issues, children's issues, general health. You can't have a healthy community without it being an informed community. So that is part of this model too. Like, how do we expand on what we have now and help us all look into the future so that we're all sustainable, so all the boats are lifted, so that all the communities have the news that they need.
It occurs to me that the Nashua Inklink project wouldn't be possible without someone like Maya. And so I wonder, is she working on anything that you'd like to preview?
Well, I mean, she's working on what she's actually working on is still kind of getting connected to different groups. She had a meeting yesterday with some young women who are working on a safety app of some sort, you know, to help young women feel safer out in the world. And this was something that Melanie was saying that reminded me to say this too, that the one thing we have to also remember is the future of journalism depends on young people like Maya. She's 23 years old. She's, you know, she's come through COVID. She, you know, existed through a time of getting her education, wrapping up, you know, high school and getting her education at a time when everything was disconnected. And she's come through that to figure out how to have a career, but she's also very much aware of global issues and local issues that are affecting her as a young person. And we have young people out there who are, this is their world. You know, whatever I'm doing in 10 years is going to be irrelevant because, you know, I hope to be, you know, sipping soup in a nursing home or something. It's like the world doesn't belong to me so much anymore. I am trying to create a way forward so that the Mayas of today and tomorrow have can know how things were and how things are and how things need to be. So I really feel a sense of urgency around connecting young people, whether it's middle school, high school age or high school, college age, to kind of give them the wisdom of the ages about good journalism. And there's certain things that you need a journalist to do. But there's also, it's important to just kind of understand how to reach people. Like the analogy somebody once gave me with a hyperlocal news site is, it's the difference between sitting in the Green Monster at Gillette Stadium and yelling at, is that the right stadium? Sitting at the ball field at the Red Sox Stadium, whatever it is, and yelling at the pitcher from, you know, from the extreme outfield, and he's not going to hear you. But if you're sitting, you know, here at the local Gill Stadium in Manchester, you could yell at the pitcher and the pitcher's probably going to yell back at you because they can hear you. There's less noise and there's more focus, and you can hear and see what's happening right around you. So the need for those smaller pockets of news, you know, the New York Times has a function, but I went to a conference a year or so ago where the, you know, the managing editor of the New York Times said, we're going to start a program where we're going to solicit news from all over the country and find the best news that's happening in small communities, and we're going to shine a light on it. And it's like, that's because they know that you can only write so many global stories of interest to any audience. Most people really do, in their heart, want to feel connected to where they are somehow. How do we do that in a digital age when everything feels so remote? Everything is, you know, disembodied voices. No offense, podcasters, but it's, I'm kidding. But that people love podcasts because they do feel connected to people that are talking about things that matter to them. So the future is ours to figure out, I guess. And I want to be part of that, but I, you know, my time is running shorter here. So I feel a lot of urgency around making sure that in 20 years from now or 30 years from now, New Hampshire's news ecosystem is strong and robust and resilient, and it can move like a shapeshifter with whatever's happening technologically or however things are. And I can't imagine. I hope there's hovercrafts, but other than that, you know, I can't imagine the world in 30 years from now, but I imagine a world where the news matters and people are engaged enough to engage with their community and make their community stronger and better and advocate for all the things that are really needed.
Well, on that very hopeful note, I'm going to move into our final questions. What advice would each of you have for someone who's interested in starting their career in journalism? And Melanie, why don't we start with you?
Oh, goodness. Always check your numbers. No, numbers are a big one for me. I would say the best advice for anyone who is looking to get started in journalism is to start at your local paper, because you will end up with the experience that you need, all the basics. You will be able to learn all the hands-on sort of interview techniques, and you know, you will learn research techniques, all of that, but you will also be able to learn the most important thing, which is that you can walk down the street and talk to 10 different people and come up with 10 different stories and feel connected to those stories because you will know those people and you'll feel what they feel and you will feel what they're experiencing. And even if you take that to some, you know, national newspaper, you won't forget that, that that is important and you'll bring it with you to every story you do. So I think that starting at a local newspaper and hopefully staying there forever because you love it is really the best thing you could do for your career.
Thank you. And what advice would you have, Carol?
Well, you know, I just a couple weeks ago, I did an online session with my former college professor at the College of New Jersey, Kim Pearson. She had her students there to listen to me about what I was doing here with the Inklink, but also covering the primary and politics and all that. And I learned a lot of those students are not journalism majors. They come from other disciplines, but they have an interest in journalism, but they don't wholeheartedly believe that they could make a career of it, or they didn't want to just study journalism because what if they can't find a job after, you know, after they graduate, because from everything you read and hear, there's not a lot of jobs out there. So I guess, you know, I guess what young people need to do is understand that if they feel a passion for journalism. And I think it's hard to explain that to anybody that doesn't, but those of us, and probably those of us right now talking on this podcast, you understand that that means when you read something and it makes you twitch a little, because you know, that's not quite right. Like they didn't, you know, that's not really, there's more to this story. You know, I have to get the rest of this story. Or you see something tangibly happening and you want to tell people what you saw, you know, reporting on something to your community. Like I think that's a talent and a skill set, and it's an innate gift in some ways, that if you know you have that in you, then you need to find a way to nurture that. Even if you're not a journalism major, dig in and find out a little bit more about journalism ethics, about the difference between, you know, unbiased reporting or balanced reporting. Like we're a world of strong opinions now, and it's hard to, you know, we have deep fakes, we have fake news, there's so many things out there that could be a detractor from becoming a journalist. But know that journalism means, you know, we are storytellers. We tell the stories of our community. We tell the stories of our time. You know, when we watch a history program, that's all based on accounts of history that were chronicled likely by journalists and historians. So it's important to learn how to tell stories, how to get the facts straight, how to check the facts. And then just, as Melanie said, you know, find a local news source that you appreciate or trust. Ask for some advice, give it a, you know, I don't know what the right answer is there, but you know, just don't give up if you have a passion for it. Find a way, create something. That's kind of what I had to do with the Inklink. I had to create something because I was tired of getting laid off. I thought, if I make something myself, I can never lose my job again. And you know, so that's what I did. But there's a lot of ingenious people doing that with podcasting, with little niche media companies and figuring out what that looks like, multimedia, you know, buy a drone. I don't know. I mean, who knows? I don't know what the future holds, but it's important for people to appreciate how journalism really tells the stories of every community. And 100 years from now, hopefully some of our stories from today will still be informing our towns and cities, for better or for worse.
And if I can just throw in on that, it's a shameless plug for one of the programs the Collaborative has, but it touches on what Carol said, which is that you don't have to have gone to journalism school to learn how to be a journalist. It takes that curiosity and that care for your community. And so one of the things we're doing at the Collaborative is in different locations, we're testing out our civic documenters program. And that's where we train local community members, you know, and sometimes students to cover those local municipal meetings and school board meetings that aren't being covered because newsrooms are so strapped for people. And they get to work with a local newsroom to produce those notes on those meetings that help the outlets produce those stories. And we train community members to do that. The training is free. We pay small stipends to community members. And so far, we did this in the Monadnock region and a couple other places, and we found that the people who are participating, they have that passion. They, you know, again, they may not have been labeled a journalist before, but they have that passion, they have that curiosity, and they have that care, and they were willing to take a chance, and it's been successful so far. So we really encourage people to apply in the regions where we have that.
Well, thank you both for such an inspiring conversation today. Before we close, I just want to make sure all of our listeners know where they can go to read all of this wonderful work that's being produced. How can people access the Nashua InkLink, the Manchester InkLink, and the Granite State News Collaborative?
Well, you can just go into your phone or computer and type in InkLink. Manchester InkLink. You might get a tattoo parlor first if you do the InkLink alone, but you know, we're kind of shifting to inklink.news gradually. You know, that's one of the strategies, is creating a sort of a clearinghouse URL that we can then create subdomains. But that's not what you asked. What you asked is how to find us. So just type it in, Manchester InkLink, Nashua InkLink, it should pop right up. It's easy to, you know, it's easy to find us. I think we have pretty good SEO, so it should be easy.
Yeah, and you can find our work and our partners' work. Our partners actually distribute our stories that we produce with freelancers, and we also help partners share each other's stories. So any place you see the little boilerplate at the end that says the story is being shared by partners in the Granite State News Collaborative, that's one of ours. But you can also go to collaborativenh.org and see all of our work and learn more about us.
Thank you so much, Carol and Melanie. It's really inspirational. And thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for being interested.
Yeah, thank you.
The Granite Beat is a project of the Granite State News Collaborative in partnership with the Laconia Daily Sun. We record at the Lakeport Opera House, and our theme music is composed by Bob McCarthy. Thanks also to the Marlon Fitzwater Center at Franklin Pierce University for editing and other support.